Dougie Gilmore.
Gilmore.
Dougie Gilmore, let me tell you.
Dougie Gilmore.
Dougie Gilmore. Gilmore.
Hey, Dougie Gilmore. Dougie Gilmore.
Didn't I tell you people, the greatest hockey player in the world today?
TSN 1200.
Oh, little kids in the hall drop there as well. Welcome back to the show, everybody, or welcome to it. 9:10 here on a Friday morning with J.R. Simmer and Hammer, reliving some memories of a guy who I think everybody agrees. There was a period of time in the early 1990s in Toronto where Doug Gilmore was the best player in the NHL, playing out of his mind. That had come after he'd won a Stanley Cup in Calgary, which came after he debuted in St. Louis, which came after a career which began way back when with the Cornwall Royals back in the day. And it's good to catch up with NHL legend Doug Gilmore joins us this morning on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. How are you doing this morning, Dougie?
Good, guys. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. I always feel good when you come back and you hear highlights like that double OT winner against Cujo and the Blues back in the playoffs.
Yeah, you know what? It's... I've never watched the whole game until obviously of late, and I sat down and I watched it, and it's just like kind of surreal. Like when you look at it, you don't know what penalties are. You know what I mean? Like it's like hooking. It's like water skiing behind a 15-horse Merc going all the way down the ice. And it's just I'm watching it going, really? This is how we played? So it's pretty cool to watch, though.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, listen, we want to kind of go through, and thanks a lot for joining us, by the way. And I know these are tough times for everybody, so glad to hear you're safe and sound. And but take us back to the days back in Cornwall, back in the day when you joined the Cornwall Royals. They actually were in the Quebec League and then transferred over to the Ontario League in your second year. What are your memories of your time in Cornwall?
It was pretty amazing. Obviously, Dale Hawerchuk was there as a kind of underage, and they won the Memorial Cup that year, and Newell Brown and a couple other players left to go to university, and it kind of made a spot opening for me. And I got to camp, and I got drafted as a defenseman, and then I got to camp, and I think the guy's name was Jeff Crawford. He was about 6'6", 236 pounds. He was a fighter. He went to the Western League after that, but I jumped on the scale after him, and I was 138. So I knew at that time they were going to pretty much move me up to forward, and it was a good transition. Obviously, learning from Dale, I played against Dale my whole minor hockey from Oshawa to Kingston. So Scott O'Neill was there. Our captain was Mark Crawford. We had Freddie Arthur, Freddie Boimstruck. The list goes on. It was a really solid team, and we ended up winning the Memorial Cup that year. And that was actually the last year they sent the team over to the World Juniors, because we went over and we picked up a line from the Quebec League, and I think out of the 12 teams, I think we were 11. So that after that, they went and picked an all-star team for the World Juniors.
Your first year junior, Dale Hawerchuk, 183 points, Dougie. And I know people know him, but because he played in Winnipeg and you had the great Calgary and Edmonton teams, would you say a little underrated, or people don't appreciate how great he was?
I think he's underrated, of course. How good he was in Winnipeg, and obviously went to Buffalo after that. But, you know, for me, I had to play against these guys, and he was – smooth. He was tricky with the puck. He didn't look like a great skater, but he was. And his numbers speak for itself. He's a great guy, great player. And you know, even when the 87 Canada Cup had the opportunity to, I'm going to say, watch these guys, I was pretty much on the bench, but it was pretty cool. So very underrated.
We're talking to Doug Gilmore. So you got drafted in the seventh round, 134th overall, by the St. Louis Blues in 1982. This came after your second year in Cornwall. Take us through that kind of draft process. I mean, where did you even, I mean, back in the day, I mean, now guys sometimes show up, will be there into the seventh round, but in a lot of cases, I mean, we didn't have computers back then. How did you find out you got drafted?
Well, believe it or not, I was playing in a ball hockey game the day before, and I tore my cartilage. So I was actually on the way back from Cornwall by train to have a micro surgery real quick. And my mom picked me up at the train station and told me I was drafted by St. Louis, and which was pretty cool too, because like just up a 5 minutes, I lived out in the country, and 5 minutes up the road was a player named Rick Wilson, and he was drafted first round a couple years before to the Blues. So I was going with somebody that I knew, and yeah, it was quite an experience. And obviously playing junior again, and then going back, and Jacques Demers came in, Ralston Perinus sold the hockey club to Harry Ornes for $3 million and the rink for $10 million. And then Harry turned around and sold it 3 years later for about $38 million. So it was a pretty nice change. But it was a lot of fun. Brian Sutter was my roommate. Had him for 5 years. Really taught me how to compete each and every game, practice. Sometimes I had to take the game with me home. But, you know, he was very, very intense, but he taught me a lot.
Dougie, back then, well, you had Larry Kelly, I believe, most of your career, local agent here in
Ottawa. My whole career.
Well, what was the agent process? Well, because Larry was a lawyer, of course, at the time, but how involved were agents when it came to drafting and I guess early in your career, where today it seems like they're all over the players?
Right. I didn't have an agent until I got drafted, and the old, our general manager, Gordy Woods, knew Killer really well, Brian Kilray. And spoke to him. I didn't have an agent, and then got a hold of Larry, and that's where we all started. And his career took off. I think he had Dougie Wilson, Steve Larmer, and I were the first three guys. And then it took off not long after.
With Doug Gilmore. So after you finished your junior career in Cornwall, as we said, you had been drafted by St. Louis at that point. You're not the biggest guy in the world, but you made the NHL, never played in the minors at that. How big were you when you made your debut? Because back then, big was big. And you weren't big.
Yeah. Well, Jacques Demers said to me, can you check? And so it's either I make 65 pro or 23 in the minors. And I said, yeah, I'll check. And, you know, they had Bernie Federko, Guy Chouinard, Larry Patey, Alain Lemieux, Mario's brother, Mike Zouk, and Blake Dunlop. So there was a lot of centermen there. And then they started making changes. And I happened to make the team. And obviously Jacques Demers gave me that opportunity, so I got to play against the best players, and I killed penalties. So, and my weight, I was 155. So
wow.
I put on 10 pounds that summer. I felt great.
Yeah, bulking up. You look at St. Louis when you played, rumors at the time, you said ownership, you had the bad building, thoughts of moving to Saskatoon. Could you ever thought, as we fast forward to 2020, first of all, Stanley Cup, but are you shocked at how many players have come out of that area?
Yeah, it's, again, you know what, from my first time there, guys, it was just, the fans were phenomenal, and obviously they won the cup last year, and it was great to see, you know, the management that I had, like Barclay Plager was there before he passed on, and it was just a lot of fun, and I played 5 years there, and then kind of moved on to Calgary, but, you know, you heard all that stuff, what you guys put on at the start of the show. It was pretty cool to have, you know, grapes on your side all the time. And I'll tell you a story. We were game, it was 3 out of 5 the first series. We're playing in Minnesota. And it was in Hockey Night in Canada game in the playoffs. And Grapes came to me and said, hey, if you want to do something tonight, you get on TV. So it worked out well that I got on TV at the end of the game. And yeah, I'll never forget all the people that helped me out there.
No kidding. All right, so you move on to Calgary. In your first year in Calgary, you guys end up winning the Stanley Cup. It was a phenomenal year. The Flames and the Montreal were by far the best, in terms of points, the best two teams in the regular season. Take us through that year, and in particular that final against Montreal where you end up winning the Stanley Cup at the Montreal Forum.
Well, it's just I got there, and there was a lot of St. Louis Blues that were traded to Calgary at the time. There's Walmsley, Ramage, Natras, Lloyd Mullen, and I. So, and Mark Hunter as well. So, you know, I kind of knew the guys, and I played on a line with Colin Patterson and Joey Mullen, and we had a great year. You know, we don't really say first, second, third line, but we had Neuendijk, Hawk and Lube, Gary Roberts. And you go down to Poplinski, Otto, Hunter, and then you had your Yuri Herdina, Mark Hunter, Ryan McClellan. The list goes on, and obviously Lanny. So it was a great team with the experience that Lanny put there for us. And Crispy was our coach. You know, Crispy was a hothead. He'd yell and scream at guys and stuff. Like old school guys. That's how it was. And as you know, we just kind of tuned them out. The team was pretty good. our back end was pretty solid with Gary Suter, Al McGinnis, Brad McCrimmon, Natras McCowan, Dana Merzen. The list goes on, and it was a fun year.
Dougie, not sure of the timing, but what was the reaction, and was there any thought to your trade at the time? Hey, when Edmonton all of a sudden flipped out Wayne Gretzky, was there a sense of relief in Calgary that, wow, now the door is open, wide open, to finally not have to face him in Edmonton?
Yeah, obviously, I didn't have that. Obviously, I played against Edmonton, but not the rivalry like Calgary had. And so when the change was made, it was pretty cool. But, we struggled, though, like our first series. We beat Vancouver, Game 7, Joel Otto just off his skate. And after that, we beat Gretz in L.A. Four straight, and Chicago in five, and then Montreal in six. So it was a great run. And then a couple of years later, Cliff left to Toronto, and they started shipping guys out. And that's kind of where, you know, again, my change. I knew I was going to be traded. Doug Risebrough and I played against each other. We really didn't like each other that much on the ice. And it kind of carried over into management, so I knew I was going to go.
When they, with Doug Gilmore, when they told you, as you said, you weren't surprised you got traded. But when you found out there were four other guys going with you and it was a 10-player trade, nowadays it'd be mind-boggling. What was it like back then to be part of such a big deal?
Yeah, well, it was New Year's Eve, and I already had a lot of my stuff out of the dressing room. We beat Montreal that night. We had a team party, and I told the guys that I'm going to go to Team Canada. Team Canada was in Calgary at the time, so I'm going to go train with them until I get moved. And saw Risebrough the next day at 9 o'clock in the morning, and he goes, "What's going on?" I said, "I'm walking today. I'm going to go play with Team Canada." And he goes, "Well, if you do that, I'm going to move you." So he called me the next 24 hours later and said, "Okay, you've been traded." And he said Toronto, and that was it. He didn't tell me there's other guys going until we all kind of found out on the news and made our way to Toronto. So it was surreal. Like it was tough. Because, you know, you grow to play with these guys, and we felt that we had a pretty good hockey club for a while. A guy I forgot in there was a rookie, Theo Fleury. And so we thought we had a pretty good team for a while, and unfortunately they moved a lot of us out.
In 88, Andy Moog was a holdout and ended up playing the Olympics, Dougie. Was there a thought that you would go and play in the Olympics, or was this just a holdover to train with the full-time Dave King team?
Well, it was a little of both. I didn't know what was going to happen, whether they're just going to let me sit. And then, so I'd walk away from my pro contract and go to play in Calgary. I was in town anyways, and I didn't want to stop playing. So between Larry and I, we just sat there and said, like, I just can't play for this guy anymore. And, as I was getting ready to go to Team Canada the following day, again, the trade was already made for a 10-player deal.
So you go to Toronto, and in your first full year there, 92-93, and then 93-94. But 92-93 was, you had 127 points that year. And not that you weren't a great hockey player before, but it just, everything was just going and the team was going. Well, why did it work so well for you in Toronto at that time? As I said, you might have been the best player in the NHL at that stage.
Well, we all, you know, when you come into the league, obviously it's different now. A lot of the guys are younger, but at that time you had to buy your time, and you know, you're coming into the right time of your career as far as everything's starting to come. And again, we shared the wealth in Calgary, so I got to Toronto and I had the opportunity to be the number one guy. And all the credit really has to go to a guy like Pat Burns. Just he was like a father figure, a cop figure, scared the crap out of you every day, but in a good way. He pushed us. And he wanted me to be the hardest working guy in practice every day, and then I'd carry over to games. And he was right. It was a fun ride, and a lot of experience on that team as well, with Foligno and Kruszelinski, McCowan, Bob Rouse, and then our leader obviously was Wendell. I always tell stories about Wendell. The following year, 93-94, Dino Ogic's all over me every shift. And Wendell comes on the ice and more or less goes up to Pavel Bure and says, "Hey, Pavel, Dino touches Gilmore one more time, I'm going to knock you out." Dino never touched me the rest of the game.
You see some of those old highlights of Wendell fighting as well. This wasn't a guy that would hold on. What was it like on the bench when he'd grab Proby or McSorley and these guys are just absolutely throwing bombs?
Yeah, you know what? Pound for pound, Wendell's probably one of the toughest guys I ever played with. He just stood in there and threw haymakers. And again, that's why I said earlier, a big part of our team, the leadership was him. And we had 2 good years at a run, and then they made the move for Mats, and things started to change. But we missed that leadership that we had there from him.
With Doug Gilmore. Okay, I got to ask you, and I'm sure you've been asked a million times. So game 6 against LA, you guys are up. Did Gretzky high stick you, and what was the conversation like with Carey Fraser?
Well, Carey, again, if Carey doesn't see it and the linesman call it, he's out of the game. And you know that wasn't going to happen. So Carey, if he didn't see it, he should have just said he saw it, give him a 2-minute penalty. We were in the box anyways. But what I said earlier, when I watched that game, guys, I've seen the high stick, but I've never watched a full game. And I can honestly say, that was the worst game Carey Fraser ever ref. I'm not even talking about the high stick. It was brutal. So I can't wait to see him again.
Dougie, you played over 1,400 games. You had over 1,400 points as a Hall of Fame career. But what would you be like, I guess, life not only as a hockey player, but after hockey, had you not been traded to Toronto?
Well, yeah, you don't know, right? You play, I mean, you know this, you play the game to have fun. You never play the game to get into Hockey Hall of Fame or anything else. And it was a fun ride, guys. It was a great experience for me for 20 years doing it. And then, it's a little different here because, you know, you've got a lot of, I just kind of rejoined the Leafs this past year as an ambassador. But it's been a fun ride. I spent a good 7 years in junior and kind of full circle and as coach and GM, and I was with the Marlies for a bit. Simmer, I was with you a little bit with the team back then. So, it's been a fun ride, and I enjoy my time. I'm a hockey fan, guys. I watch games all the time, and again, I'm back working with Elise, so it's been really cool.
You had an opportunity to play for Toronto and have just a phenomenal run there. You also played for a couple of years in Montreal. What was that like right toward the tail end of your career?
Well, you know what? After 9/11 happened, I wasn't playing. I wasn't in camp, and I thought I was going to retire. And Ottawa called and Montreal called. And Jacques Martin was a coach that I had previous in St. Louis. And that's when Saku had cancer in Montreal. And Larry wanted me to go to Ottawa. We thought we had a deal done. The ownership at that time said that they weren't going to bring me in. So I went to Montreal. And it was, it was fun. You know what? I don't speak French, so pretty much the reporters didn't talk to me at all. One of my favorite stories with that was like, can you give me 2 weeks to train? So I get there, and 2 days later, I'm playing against Buffalo, my old team, and we lost that game, and Jeff Hackett got kicked, got knocked out, got hit. So I got 4 days off now, then we're playing in Buffalo. So I put some money on the board to win. And my daughter was coming to the game, and they were about 5 minutes late. And by the time they got there, I got kicked out of the game 2 minutes in. Vaclav Barada ran over Jose Theodore and knocked him out. So I went from one end to the other, and so I got kicked out. So we ended up winning the game, and I got suspended for 2 games. So that probably cost me my second game back about $20,000.
Wow. Wow.
To that Ottawa story, was there a feeling of why it didn't end up working out, or was there a perception that Doug Gilmore is a Toronto Maple Leafs? Any more backstory between yourself and Larry and the ownership in Ottawa?
No, the ownership was a little bit of turmoil at the time, guys, and it was 2001. And we were asking for 1.8, and they just said they couldn't afford it. And it's unfortunate because it would have been a fun ride with them. They had a good hockey club, and it's something that, you know, I don't regret that I had a good time in Montreal, good players, and obviously the franchise, the history there, but It probably would have been better scenario to go to Ottawa with the team that they had.
Yeah, that would have been, I think, Rod Brydon back in the day. Listen, I have lots of good memories of you. I was living in Toronto when you went on that incredible run, but and I don't know if you remember this time. I think it was when you were with Montreal. You took a penalty. You went into the box and you slammed the door so hard that the glass, yeah, the penalty box door broke. Do you remember that?
Yeah, you know what? We were playing against Carolina, and it was game 5 or 6, and I think we're down 2 goals, and I took a penalty. I was pissed off, and I went in this could have been my last year. I only had a 1-year deal, and when it happened, like many times, gone in the box for 20 years and slammed the door. Well, when it broke, I just put my head down, and like nothing happened because I knew I was going to be in that penalty box for a while. So the worst part was they took me out of the penalty box and put me on the other side, and then we end up losing the series. But it was a good year for, you know, Saku coming back, and we beat Boston the first round. So, yeah, great memories.
Right.
I know you watch a ton of hockey. Should we get the NHL back? Let's hope we do for a playoff. Any thoughts on a favorite? I know you're collecting a check from the Leafs, but overall in the teams you've watched, any one team you say, and especially if you have the opportunity to get healthy, you think who would be your cup favorite?
It's a tough one right now. Boston's right there again. Tampa's a good hockey club. You know who kind of surprised me this year is Philly. They're there. Washington's always going to be hard. Pittsburgh. So I don't have a favorite. I think with the Toronto team, and if they can ever get by the first round, with the skill level of talent, you never know, right? But are we going to see a playoff? Who knows, guys? I sure hope so. And the biggest thing is everybody stay safe, man. This is scary times.
Yeah, absolutely. I before you go, I did want to ask you about your time, when you went to Kingston with the Frontenacs and got into management there. And what did kind of take us through your time there? I mean, you end up leaving the job. Is it something that you would have liked to have stuck out longer? Did it kind of run its course? So sort of take us back through that.
Yeah, it's a tough gig, guys. Like the coaching side was a lot easier than the GM side. But at the same time, you don't always get the best players. And it's a lot of, I'm not going to say too much on it, but there's a lot of agents dictate where the players go. And it's not fair to small market teams. So I enjoyed it. There's things that got to be improved. I stayed with it until we got the Shane Wright kid. Had a phenomenal year at Kingston. And hopefully I can build around that now and move forward. But again, it's something that I went back home. I left home when I was 20 years old, so I spent some time with my parents before they passed on, and that's pretty much the reason why I'm home. So I'm glad I did.
All right, good stuff. Great to travel down memory lane with you, and glad to hear that you're safe and sound, continued good health, and really appreciate the time this morning. Thanks.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
All right. There's Doug Gilmore, the man better known as Killer, joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Brought to you by Pizza Perks at Gabriel Pizza. Download the Gabriel Pizza Perks app and sign up today. I would say, Simmer, I don't think I knew that Doug Gilmore was that close to signing with the Ottawa Senators.
No.
Or maybe I've forgotten it, but I don't remember that.
No, I don't recall that either. Working in Washington at the time, I was trying to think back. I don't know if the timeline. Would Jacques Martin, would there have been a connection to St. Louis back in the day?
I think, yeah, that's what he mentioned, right?
Yeah, so that to Larry Kelly, to local players. And I think those are always the stories, right, when you hear from different people and agents and how close you come to different moves. I can still remember when the New Jersey Devils trade was made from Toronto, how critical people were. And at the end of the day, they ended up getting Jason Smith, Steve Sullivan, and Alan McCauley in that deal. And people thought it was pretty anonymous at the time. And all three went on to have excellent careers.
Alan McCauley killed the Sens in the playoffs one of those years. Him and Gary Roberts, for goodness sakes. I want to say it was Rod Brydon then, because I think Eugene Melnyk took over in 2002.
Yeah.
Was there about. So if we're talking about, I couldn't make the money work at one point.
Sure.
Crazy to think now at $1.8 million, right? Couldn't make the money work, but that was the situation here in Ottawa back then.
No, very much. Whatever year the World Junior was in Halifax, can still remember being in the hotel lobby And Peter Chiarelli walked in at that time, was working basically with bankruptcy court to try to figure out the working with the league. Yeah. That was when Ottawa was in their financial trouble.
I want to say that was the 03 World Juniors, which would have been winter of 02, okay. Right into okay. Early 2003 was the Halifax World Juniors. Yeah. All right. Great to visit with Doug Gilmore. That was fun. Welcome back. We'll take a break. And when we come back, we'll get into a final half hour. Get to more of your wrenches on this wrench throwing Friday. Continue to toss them. Text us. That's the easiest way at 12-1200. You can also follow us at on Twitter at TSN1200 as we continue along here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. A phenomenal NHL career. I won a Stanley Cup in Calgary. Had two of the best years any player has ever had back with the Leafs in the early 1990s. Played in Montreal. A great career. Got a couple of texts on this. Great interview with Doug Gilmore. But WTF, Mario Lemieux had a brother who played in the NHL? I asked two of my hockey buddies, and none of us had ever heard of Alain Lemieux. Then again, 28 goals and 44 assists over 8 seasons is pretty forgettable, I guess. That comes from unsigned. Yeah, Alain Lemieux, just looked him up on Hockey Reference. The stats are correct. 72 games played, 119 games total. In his career, born in 61. So I think Mario was 65, I want to say.
Yeah.
So he's 4 years. So he was his older brother. I don't know if you have any memories of Alain Lemieux.
No. Thinking of brother connections, Patrick Waugh's brother played on the World Junior with myself, was drafted in Minnesota. I always think about Claude Lemieux's brother, Jocelyn, I think was a first-round pick. Yeah. And what I also remember from Jocelyn, the day of, I was actually in Montreal with a buddy of mine who was drafted by the Canadians, and I saw Pat Burns of the Montreal for me. He calls me over, he's like, psst. There's going to be a big trade today. Gretz is on the move. I was like, really? Wow. I still remember just listening on the car radio. But I think St. Louis and Montreal made a big trade of nothing. And a lot of that was the ties between Ron Caron and Cliff Fletcher. And you had a whole bunch of them that started out scouting for the Montreal Canadiens. And I think Vincent Réandoux was in that and Jocelyn Lemieux. So that's my recollection of Lemieux. I've never heard that about Mario Lemieux's brother.
Yeah. Well, you think about it. Now, older brother, a little bit different, right? Because I don't know his timeline, but I'm assuming he may have been in the NHL before Mario descended. Yeah, it's the other way around, right? You think about when you're the brother of a superstar of Wayne Gretzky's brother, right? Brothers, right?
Oh,
it was
gosh,
Keith, of course, was the next one.
Yeah.
But it was Brent, who had a pretty good junior career. I want to say it was in Belleville, right? Brent Gretzky was in Belleville, but I think only ended up playing a handful of games in the National Hockey League.
Well, he got a real nice chance with Tampa Bay and played more than expected. I played against Keith throughout junior, was a hell of a player, but what a burden that was. Oh. Think mid-80s, smallish guy. Like, come on, it's not going to end up working. And also, I you think of brother relationships, I always think of a little bit like the Lemieux one would have been Denny Potvin coming in, and JP was what? I think Denny was, what, 15? And JP was a 20-year-old.
Yes,
and how that was, because even at that age, I think Denny was considered to be the policeman for his older brother, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Got a text in. Didn't get time. We could have spent another hour with Doug Gilmore, but someone texted in and said you'll have to ask him of his first stories of Ottawa resident Kevin Skilleter, both on the Cornwall Royals in 81-82 and 82-83. If I had to guess, and I don't know anything. In fact, I'll look it up right now because I'm on his hockey database. I'm guessing maybe big penalty minute guy.
Sounds like it. Yeah. Well, Jimmy Kite was on the team. You had the
Jimmy Kite, 148 penalty minutes.
Yeah, you had the Scotty Arneal connection. Had some real good kind of, well, there were a ton of local ties back in the day. The longtime trainer there was a gentleman by the name of Steve Odekirk, and that was the legendary guy that under Howard Chuck to when I played in the OHL ended up opening up a bar in Cornwall, and I love it. And if people remember, the name Steve Malte was a real good junior player, played a little in the NHL, a great IHL player, and a character and a half. But he had this bar made, and he came in one day and he had all the pictures up of the great Cornwall Royals, and Maltz is like, come on, Odie, what the hell's going on? You don't have a picture of me up. next time he comes in, there's a picture of Maltz in all three of the urinals. So he said, now we've got pictures of you for everybody.
That's awesome. Kevin Skilleter, I couldn't have been more wrong. 50 games, one season, 16 penalty minutes. So
okay.
Defenseman. Another defenseman on that team, just Speaking of local ties, was Roy Mullary, who I think was drafted, I want to say, by, would have been, I guess, Atlanta back in the day. His son was a real, real good hockey player in this area, because I think Roy lives in this area now and I believe is attending Penn State.
Oh, cool. So, yeah, I love that too. Early in my scouting, Orville Tessier was doing some scouting, and it was really cool to travel around with some of the old school hockey people. But he would sit down and talk about, you have to remember, this is, was kind of an expansion team into the Quebec League. They won the Memorial Cup, did they not, within about 2 years of him putting that team together? Like, he had these players, he'd get some from Quebec, he'd have a few around the Ontario, kind of outline the rules. But every one of those is a neat backstory of how some of those great Cornwall teams were put together.
You remember how I tried to kill off Steve Gwinnett, the goalie?
Yeah, Stevie,
right?
Yeah,
of course, he's just texted in, so good to hear, Steve, you're still alive. Simmer, I played with Alain Lemieux in Baltimore.
Okay.
My rookie year, he was tremendous, a tremendous player, just lacked everything that made Mario great, as in size, read, speed, but he could do everything on the ice. He was a tremendous offensive player. From Steve Gwinnett, alive and well,
there's Stevie. Stevie would have played for the Skipjacks, and the coach at the time was Gene Ubriaco from the Sioux. Best friends with Tony and Phil growing up. Close relation to the Bumbaco family. We're going mafia here. But Stevie, of course, that ties into. And this is, okay, that's the hockey world. So we'll say Steve Gwinnett. He comes from Gloucester. He goes and plays as an overage in Guelph. They win a Memorial Cup of Jacques Martin coaching, to beating Pat Burns, to Gary Roberts being on the team. Goes to that Pittsburgh group, and Stevie ended up playing, I think, most of his career that was in the NHL, I believe, for your Calgary Flames. So a good local guy and one hell of a goaltender.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, 9:48. I tell you what, let's take a final break and then we'll come back. We'll kind of revisit the topics of the day, get to some final wrenches before we make way for the boys from In the Box. Today, Steve Lloyd and Steve Bunda will take you through. See, Lloyd, he tweeted out, he's got some nice guests. Henry Burris is going to be by, as well as Jason Smith. You remember him, of course, from his days assistant coach with the Sens back in the day. We're going to revisit more time from the Hamburger run. Jason Smith will join the boys on the show. They're going to talk a little bit about the OHL draft, which goes tomorrow. 67s with the 20th and final pick in the first round. North Bay Battalion have the first pick overall. And, of course, Gord Wilson will stop by as well. All on In the Box today between 10 and 2. Ian and Lee are on the drive this afternoon at 2. And then tonight, more Classic Sens, best 10 of the last 10. A phenomenal game for you tonight. It is the Ottawa-Pittsburgh game. We've got a lot of Pittsburgh games. Ottawa-Pittsburgh from the Hamburglar run, game 80. The legendary game of the big comeback and the Mark Stone overtime winner. We got that for you tonight at 6, right here on TSN 1200. Somehow, some way, in 3 hours and 54 minutes, we haven't gotten to yet, and I don't, with no games going on. But that's the way the show rolls. Mm-hmm. And I got a few texts from people saying, I don't know how you guys are pulling together a sports show with no sports, but that's how we do it. We do it by just, it's just random thoughts going in, and we've got, let's say, the master of random thoughts in Sean Simpson at the helm here, right?
So, I was going to say, geez, I can't believe you're not patting yourself on the back by talking about your grocery games there, Dee Fieri.
That ended up filling a full hour. Also, just to Lloydie have it on, and it is, for sure, my brain goes all over. Jason Smith was part of that Gilmore trade, and I'll never forget, Pat Quinn couldn't stand Jason Smith in Toronto and flipped him out for a couple of second-round picks, put Stevie Sullivan on waivers, who Chicago picked up. And then I know in Toronto, boy, they did not want to trade Al McCauley, and that was, of course, a featured piece of the Owen Nolan trade back in the day. So there we are. We'll bring you full circle to cap off a fun week.
All right, there we go. All right, 9:55. A couple of quick NFL notes. Sammy Watkins is re-signed with the Kansas City Chiefs this morning. He was due to make, I think, $14 million this year. Re-signed for $9 million with incentives, could get up to $16 million. It was important for the Chiefs to do that. Because as Adam Schefter reported this morning, they were sitting, and this is a true fit. Well, it's Adam Schefter, so yeah, it's true. They were sitting, in terms of salary cap space, $171. That's it. $171 was what they had before they restructured Sammy Watkins' deal. Now, I never want to miss an opportunity. Do not want this week to run out without being able to somehow bury the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh,
and
I
listen,
know,
we
yeah.
don't have a lot of games, but this came across our Twitter this morning. This is from the ESPN television morning show. It's called Get Up. Rex Ryan, never short of opinions, is guesting, and I'm not sure how it got around to talking about Amari Cooper, who, of course, just re-signed with the Cowboys for, I think, 5 years and $100 million, $20 million a year. Here's Rex Ryan on the Cowboys receiver.
To me, this is the biggest disappearing act in the National Football League. He doesn't show up on the road. He doesn't show up against, when the competition's good, when he's against the top corners, that guy disappears. And to me, he reminds me, it's only one time that I can remember in recent memory on elite receivers and disappearing acts like Amari Cooper. That was the kid that the Raiders had a few years ago. Oh, that's right. That was Amari Cooper. This is who he is. And Dan, he doesn't love football. Hell with it. He stops his routes. He does all this. I wouldn't have paid this turd. No way in hell. Right. No way in hell would I.
Wow. Okay. Tell us how you really feel. I wouldn't have paid this turd. Rex Ryan on Amari Cooper.
Never bad when throwing so the little turd action. There were some strange sequences, and this reminds me of 2 years ago with a Gurley where you're kind of wondering, what's going on here? Why is this guy playing? There were a bunch of sequences down the stretch as they were trying to make the playoffs last year where Amari Cooper was on the sideline, was he not?
You know what? I'll say this about Rex Ryan. That was completely over the top.
Yeah.
But he's absolutely right, and Cowboy fans can back this up. On the road, completely different player. Like
really?
His stats on the road, you're right. They played the Eagles. That Eagles game was a de facto division championship game in the second to last week of the season,
yeah.
And Amari Cooper was nowhere to be seen. And he had killed the Eagles in games previous, but that game in Philadelphia was nowhere to be seen. So I guess you get what you pay for, right?
Yeah, and also to the Kansas City Chiefs, I guess there has to be a feeling that you win this year, right? And then what, Mahomes is going to get 40 mil?
Yes.
And start squeezing out a lot of good players. So
yeah.
Better get at it while you can.
You want to get a lot of guys on one-year deals because next year that new deal for him is going to kick in. All right, just to bring things full circle, put a bow on it. This is our unofficial Twitter poll we did of, because when we roll through our best 10 of the last 10, which we got a game for you tonight, then four more games next week, including three games from the 2017 playoff run. We're going to we're batting around the idea of playing some or all of the 2017 playoff run. It was such a magical time here in Ottawa, kind of 6 weeks from the highest highs to, unfortunately, in double overtime, the lowest lows. So we threw out the idea of, hey, do you want to hear all the games from that playoff run, including the losses or just the wins? Because there were 11 wins, and of course the Game 7 loss to Pittsburgh, when it was all said and done, it was pretty close to split. 59% of you said, I just want to hear the wins. I don't want to live with the losses. 41% of you said that. So we'll take that into consideration. That'll be the week after next. We may move into that, but for the here and now, we'll relive three of those games for you next week from 2017. But two more Hamburglar Run games between now and then. Monday will be the Sens-Flyers game that clinched the playoff spot, the final game of 2015. And tonight, that Sens-Pittsburgh game, the big comeback by Ottawa with the Mark Stone game winner in overtime. Great, too, in lieu of actually having live games to relive some great memories. So we'll have that for you tonight.
Yeah, and for the talent that's on the air, just asking for a friend, do we receive any royalties for that? Because I worked a bunch of the intermissions.
We're not playing the intermission, Simmer.
Oh, yes.
Sorry, my friend.
Okay, well, I'm asking for Goody and Dino, though.
All good. Enjoy the weekend, Simmer.
All right, boys.
Thanks, everybody, for listening this week. Stay safe, stay healthy, be positive. Okay, we're going through some tough times, but we'll get through it together. And in the meantime, we're here to provide your home away from home in terms of your radio. So Steve Lloyd, Steve Bunda, Kenny Walls will take you through In the Box coming up next. Ian and Lee are on the drive alongside Matty Vowles.